I'm Carolyn Markle Hammond, and I am having the great fortune of being the third Saturday of every month with the Intentionally Fearless radio show as a part of Every Woman here on KKFI. So again, every time this third Saturday rolls around, it's a bright spot in my week, and I've been looking forward, especially this week, to this Saturday. So thank you, ladies, again for having me and letting me be on the show. I appreciate it.
You are more than welcome. It would be a very sad, lonely show if we were just sitting here going, so what should we talk about today?
Well, I have an agenda for today. As we work through being intentionally fearless, you know, one of the things we always talk about is using our superpowers. You know, what is it inherently that we do well that we can step into fully? Fiona and I were having a great conversation before this started, and we really talked about how people can become silenced, especially if you're not in the majority of any ruling party or any position of power or a certain dynamic of power. Pretty soon your voice begins to get silenced, and when that happens, your superpower gets diminished and you don't step fully into it. So today, again, we're going to talk about superpowers of people, and we're going to talk about what folks can own as their own personal zone of genius, so they step fully into their lives, not only in their interactions personally between friends, family, neighbors, but professionally in employer situations with coworkers and with the company itself. So that's the topic we're going to be having today. And as we're having these conversations, if you feel inclined to call in, please do. We'd be happy to take your calls at any moment. But that's what we're going to be talking about today.
And if you want to call in, that number is 816-931-5534.
Thank you. So one of the things I'd like to throw to you ladies is, has there been a situation at work where you felt silenced? And when you felt silenced, how did you overcome that?
Oh, that's... Una, did you want to go first, or shall I?
Why don't you go first? I have too many examples.
Yeah, we could fill up the whole hour with that and have no variety. It varies. I mean, I know that when I was first in IT working in the UK, I took over a role as a team lead from a male who had been doing that role. And when he had started doing the role, he had originally been earning, I don't know what it would be in today's dollars, but let's just imagine he had been earning $100 a day as a contractor, and then he was promoted to leading that team. And in recognition of him leading the team, because that was the sort of role that should be paid more, his daily rate went up to $200 a day as a contractor. And when I took over leading the team, my pay didn't go up at all. And I protested to our manager, who was a different manager by then, that this role was one that normally went at $200 a day, and that when the previous person had taken over, that had happened to them. And they were like, I don't know if we can do that because you're currently at the $100, just like the guy before me had been. I'll have to talk to accounting and see if they can do anything. And after he talked to accounting, apparently it could be $113 a day.
Wow.
So it's not necessarily my voice being silenced there, but my experience and my and my power and my value was being silenced. And of course, after he said, $113 a day, I went, great, thank you. And then I went and updated my resume, and I went and worked for another company where, ironically, I was at about $113 a day, but I didn't have that background and history of being diminished and devalued down to $113 a day at what should have been $200.
You know, that's such an important story, because in some of the work I've done over the longevity of my career, it's been an evolution. And of course, if you look at data from other companies, it costs so much money to rehire, train, and get somebody in there. So retention becomes vital. And if you as a manager or a leader or as an organization devalue your employees in their authentic work history and zone of genius, then what you do is you turn people away.
Yeah.
And that just costs you money and affects your profitability.
Yes. Right after I left, for some reason, they started converting contractors to being permanent employees because they had realized that they were losing experience and expertise. And so my leaving benefited everyone else that stayed, other than any female that wanted to be paid the same as a male. But people got paid vacation and things and training.
Wow. Wow. Now, is there a way in that situation that you learned something that you then took forward into your next roles, your next experience?
Well, I had been aware of unequal footing for a long time between males and females, but I think with various laws about equality and so forth, I had foolishly believed that there would be equal pay for equal work. And that was my first experience with the fact that there very evidently wasn't, and there wasn't much that I could do about it. And I was in a very privileged position because I actually knew what the role had been getting before it was given to me and what the person had been earning before they took that role, because I had previously worked with the budgets for this, so I knew everyone's rates. Most people, even without laws suppressing discussion of pay at work, most people don't talk about money because it's considered not polite.
Exactly, exactly. And you can get have an experience where you're actually reprimanded for sharing.
Yes, and
my worst experiences are supervisors that if I'm that, well, this doesn't happen anymore because now I'm a senior manager and because I have a different attitude. But earlier on, I would ask a client a question like, so how many gallons does this tank hold? And the supervisor would step in before anyone could answer and say, so what we're wanting to know is, what is the capacity of the tank? And it's like, that's just what I asked for. And they would do that quite often, or I would ask a question and they would immediately, before anyone could answer it, rephrase it as if they had to say it the right way. Now, there are sometimes, as a manager, when one of my younger ones asks kind of the wrong question, like if there's four tanks and they'll say, well, how many gallons does this, how many gallons does the system have? And I'll say, I just want to clarify, you know, how many per tank, because they're different sizes. So we want to know each individual one. I won't repeat exactly what they said. I'll add something substantive instead of just basically rephrasing it in a male voice. And I, you know, would often get talked over in meetings by people. But now that I'm the manager, when I see it, well, a good example is when I went to India. And in the meetings in India, a lot of times the manager sits at the head of the table and the male engineers all sit on one side or overflow to the other, and all the women engineers sit in a little group. And the manager asks all the male engineers for their opinion and everything, or he'll say, who has opinions on this? And they'll all speak up. And then the women engineers will try to speak up, and one of the male engineers will jump in and interrupt them. And it doesn't ever happen the other way. And when I was there, I was a senior manager, and I'm sitting there observing the meeting. And after just the second time it happened, I said, I was like, hold on a minute. You know, this engineer, I'll just make up a name, you know, Prativa, she was in the middle of a sentence, and you interrupted her. So that's really very rude. Why would you do such a thing? And the manager would speak up and say, well, he was just like, no. She was stating her opinion, you know, what? And I found out that that was actually the wrong thing to do because, you know, they said, we really appreciate, the women engineers would come up to me afterwards and say, we really appreciate you and love you for recognizing that we had something to say, but you're going to leave in a week and we're going to suffer for this. We're going to be seen as troublemakers for you asking us to speak up and for you cutting off the people that are walking over us. You're a big boss, but you're 11,000 miles away, and we have to live with this every day. So please don't try to intervene as much. And you have to, I had to be much more strategic about the way I did things. Another thing I did is the very next meeting, I sat at the head of the table in the manager's chair, and he came in and did this double take and sees this woman sitting there. And I'm like, oh, hello. Please take a seat anywhere you would like, you know, and just kept disrupting things and poking the bear, so to speak.
Thinking of poking the bear, I wonder whether the status of the engineers can be told from which of the male ones were the unfortunate ones that had to overflow onto the women's side of the table, or if it's just whoever's unlucky enough to get to the meeting slightly late.
Well, the more important ones sit by the manager. Nobody wanted to sit by me except the women engineers, so there you go.
Were there anything that you learned from your time? Because you've spent a lot of time, you know, in traveling and doing your work, Una. Is there anything you've realized as a theme in certain countries that was different in how you needed to navigate the men in management positions?
It was definitely different. I mean, in our office at the time, there was not a single female manager in an office of 500 people. And that's just stunning, because even here in the U.S., it's about 25% to 30%. But not having a single one was incredible. And other offices like China, Thailand, the U.K. U.K. was actually reversed. We had more women managers than male managers. And in China and Thailand, there was more mutual respect. If a woman engineer was speaking up, nobody interrupted her. Now, that doesn't mean that they gave her more credence, but they weren't as impolite as to just walk on top of her. They may ignore everything she said, but at least it wasn't in her face. So every country had its own differences in interpersonal relations that I had to learn to, I did have to learn to fit in a bit, and I could only push things so far because, like I said, I don't live there every day. I can't protect them every day. And so I don't want to make their life, you know, miserable as soon as I get on the plane.
And I think that's one of the dynamics, you know, we're coming up on a break, but when we come back, let's talk about those dynamics as women. How can we have an influence in the places where we can play? And how do we have an influence when we have to navigate that with a little more caution?
This is Alice Kitchen with the Women's Equality Coalition. Discrimination against women has followed us through the ages. A number of myths need to be spelled out. Myth number one, we women are in the Constitution. Even though 38 states have ratified the Equal Rights Amendment, but not Missouri, we have the threshold that is needed to be a constitutional amendment. And yet, because of a little known tag that was put on this process a number of years ago, it instilled a deadline that we have to overcome. So this Congress needs to remove that deadline. So it matters a lot because women, we don't have the same standing as cases that have to do with race, age, and disability. Myth number two, wages. People think that women are paid the same as men. Wrong. A recent study shows that when you compare men and women based on education, experience, and skills, all the same, Asian women make 90 cents on the male dollar. White women make 79 cents on the male dollar. Black women, 62 cents. Hispanic women, 54 cents. Native American women, 57 cents. And it makes a big difference in retirement. So as you make less money over the years, your retirement is greatly reduced. Myth number three, it is okay for an employer to ask you your salary history in the hiring process. No, it is not okay in Kansas City, Missouri. And it matters because we women are in and out of the workforce more often than men due to pregnancy, childbearing, and rearing, and caring for aging parents. So in summary, discrimination does exist today. It exists in many forms, and we need you to recognize it and to call it out. The views expressed here are my own and not necessarily those of KKFI.
So welcome back, everyone. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, which is Kansas City's community radio. So thank you so much for coming back with us. So let's talk a little bit. We talked about how, as women, we can navigate the treachery that sometimes is within employment situations, but we also have to be very cautious of the dynamics and of how the people we're trying to advocate for then have to live after we've spoken up or after we've given counsel. And how does that play out not only for us, for the people we're trying to advocate for, but then how does that affect the overall employment situation? I recently had a situation like that where in the company that I was with formerly, people came to me because there were some big questions. A lot of people came to me with some pretty big questions. And sometimes the answers have to be, and I'll really interested in what you ladies think about this, my answer had to be, based on the current dynamics, I don't think you do anything. Because doing something in this situation would harm your job. So unless you're ready for that to happen, then you might want to see how this plays out over time. But saying something now could actually be a detriment. And as someone who likes to advocate, and for someone who's been wired to do so, it's really hard to say right now, do nothing. But what do you think about that?
Well, you should never advise people to do nothing. At that point, they should be starting to document. If I don't know what the case was, but if it's anything that might impinge on their job, where they think they're being unfairly treated, they're not being given, say there are 10 people in the department and all the males are getting the really interesting projects and the things that will stretch their skills and thus set them up for the next level of promotion, and all the females are getting given exactly the same work that they had yesterday and nothing that stretches them or develops new skills. And they can see that that's happening, and they know that they went and asked for a promotion or a raise and they were told no because your skills aren't growing. They need to start documenting that. They shouldn't be just sitting there and doing nothing. They need to start documenting what is happening and why they think they're being treated unfairly, because at some point, if they ever did decide to go and consult a lawyer and the lawyer said, I think you've got a case, but we're going to need information, we're going to need this, this, and this, they would have to start documenting, say, 2 years later and 2 years of frustration, and wouldn't have all of those records.
And true. If it's something like that, great advice. And that's exactly what should be done. In this situation, it was more of an overall culture of how people were being treated, and they wanted to step in and start, you know, fixing it right away. And so it wasn't directly related to them, but an overall company culture. And so my counsel was to get the lay of the land and see, do nothing right now until you have the lay of the land. But even doing nothing right now while you're getting the lay of the land and you're assessing things is hard to say, other than get to know people, get your choices, start with building your network, but to act in a way that is really jumping forward before knowing all the players. In that sort of inaction, it's even hard to say that.
Yeah, and sometimes it might be that it is the whole company culture, in which case what you really need to do is update your resume.
Exactly.
But don't just leap, because you still have bills to pay. But you might find it's just your one office at the company, and that's why you need that network and to find out how the other offices are, so that you know who will take things seriously and whether there are retaliations and so forth.
I like both those options. I mean, when in doubt, document, get the lay of the land, get your facts straight. I don't want to be devil's advocate, but there have been times when I thought something was systemically unfair at work, but when I really dug into it and asked some polite questions and looked into a certain situation, it turned out it was actually just my perception from where I wasn't getting enough information from my supervisor, so it did seem unfair. Now, there have been other cases, of course, where things weren't unfair, and there are some cases, of course, where the lay of the land is brought into immediate crystal clear focus, like when I was at a conference and saw a vendor from another company talking to a female engineer from my company, and he puts his hand kind of around her shoulders, like she doesn't know him, never met him before in her life, she's young, she's dressed well and everything, and he's already got hands. I walked over and grabbed his wrist with my left hand and lifted it off, and he was like, oh, whoa, I'm sorry, you two aren't girlfriends or something, are you? I said, no, I'm her supervisor, and I'd like to know why you put hands on my employee. Oh, well, I was just, you know, being friendly and everything. I said, yeah, go be friendly somewhere else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That leads to an article I was reading this week about the presumption of overtly friendly, and men will sometimes say, I was just being polite. Well, I don't see you go up to every woman and put your arms around her.
Nor every man.
Nor every man. Exactly. So it was an interesting article about how this woman had gone to a conference, and she had written an article about how she was approached by a male colleague, and he was extremely inappropriate, and she told him that he was inappropriate, and she backed off, and he proceeded at her again, and thus became this little, her saying get away from me and him keep coming at her. And she ultimately excused herself from a conference that she was really excited to be attending because she suddenly felt very unsafe. Come to find out, she elaborated that she had been a victim of child sexual abuse and that this really triggered her. Regardless, you don't get to come up to someone and put your hands on them, and then when they clearly tell you no, you do it again and again and again, and then kind of shrug your shoulders of, I'm only being nice, when you've been told stop.
Well, you do if you're a boy who always did the I'm not touching you thing in the back seat to their sister and was never properly squelched from their parents and told why people's personal space is personal space and why you don't do that.
Exactly. Exactly.
It was happening to me last night. I mean, out at the nightclub, a guy sitting down the booth who never seen before, sitting next to me, and after talking to me, they're moving closer, and then they rest their paw on my forearm, and I stopped talking mid-sentence, and I just looked right down deliberately. I looked up, and I said, are you in pain? Are you hurt? Are you sick? And they're like, no. I said, oh, I was wondering if you needed to brace yourself on my arm because your hand's on my arm. Oh, well, I was just being friendly. I was like, oh, that's not what I call being friendly. I mean, but you're not in pain because you could be in pain if you don't move your arm. And then I was coming out, there's a all-gender bathroom there, and I came out of the stall and I was fixing my hair in the mirror quickly, and this guy comes out and like, hey, do you remember me? I'm like, hey, no, I have no idea who you are. And he's like, oh, okay, well, it's good to see you again. Said, yeah, hey, you too. Hey, can I have a hug? I'm like,
hey, no.
I'm like, I'm sorry? He's like, can I have a hug? What's wrong? Aren't you friendly? I said, well, you just came out of the stall. You haven't washed your hands. I have no idea who you are. I don't know your name. I don't remember your face. You just came out with your filthiness, and you just want to hug me. Why? He's like, oh, well, then he started mouthing off and calling me the B word and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, you got that right.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then I went out and told the member of security, it's my standard club. I said, yeah, this guy, he probably needs to go home. You know, he's been here a long time. He's tired.
He's been here long enough to pay the entry fee, so, I mean, that's what you really need out of him.
He needs to go take a rest on the sidewalk for a while, you know.
Exactly.
It's a cool night.
I think in those situations, women keep reanalyzing what they could have done differently, and I would really love it to be, you did everything.
Well, or not even had to have done everything. We are constantly, anytime we tell someone what happened to us, they either say, oh, that didn't happen to you, which my own mother did when I was in primary school, when she hadn't been there or anywhere near or heard any reports from anyone else, or we're constantly asked what we did that encouraged it. So we second guess ourselves and gaslight ourselves out of believing our own experiences and our own truths.
See, the reason that I could say things like I've demonstrated at nightclub isn't because I'm some superwoman, isn't because I'm some, you know, MMA fighter or whatever. I mean, you can see me right now. I'm 106 pounds soaking wet, and I'm not going to intimidate anybody, but it's not because I have incredible psychic powers. It's simply because it's like the 3,000 or 4,000th time it's happened, and I'm just so weary and shopworn, it doesn't faze me. But I had to get to that point by going through 3,000 to 4,000 previous times.
But a lot of people that go through the 3,000 or 4,000 previous times get to the point where they're ground down and eroded from it rather than pushed up and backed up and can now face it.
I guess I just get angry a lot.
Yeah, I start to get really angry too. I had an experience where I was at a convention of judges, right? So people we are trusting to make the best decisions. And if you, I'm
sorry, I didn't mean to snort during that.
Steeped in sarcasm there. And I've never met this person before. And I'm at a conference. And in fact, I'm speaking at the conference. I'm conducting an entire session at this conference because I'm considered the expert, because I am the expert. This is what you've asked me to come here to do. He doesn't know me, and he can't keep his hands out of my hair. I love your curly hair. I said, don't touch me. But I love your curly hair. I said, don't touch me. I said, I'm going to be very, very specific. Not only do I not want you touching me, I want you at a minimum 7 feet away from me. Oh, you're just kidding. I am not.
And if you, that's you as a white woman experiencing that. If you consider how many black women have that all through society, with people having this insane fixation on wanting to touch other people's hair and acting as if other people's bodies are their property. They do the same thing to pregnant women, regardless yes. of their race. Just random stranger comes up and puts their hand on their stomach. I mean, who in their right mind thinks that they should be able to just go up to a stranger and put their hand on their stomach?
Exactly.
Having a instant concomitant punch in the face for invading personal space and effectively assaulting a person.
Right.
Ditto with the touching of the hair without consent, and then trying to legislate it, that hair, out of existence and say that it's unprofessional.
Exactly. Exactly. And part of those things, I think, happen very early on from childhood. You were saying it, Fiona, when you said your mom even dismissed something you told her. I think, you know, and I'd love after this, as we're talking about it, because I want to have some solutions, right? So we've talked about these things. What are ways we can do it? I was having this great conversation this week with two of my kids and saying, I'm so glad that as we've grown as a family, we've learned things differently, because I can see where I unintentionally silenced you as children. And I can see that. I've changed over the course of the years. Once I saw it, I've implemented those. But you're going to learn them way, way sooner than I did. And you're going to be honoring your children. And I think it comes back not only as if you are around young children, but you encourage them to know them, their bodies, to know themselves, even as a friend or an ally within their world. But you certainly do it in the spaces where you can, as we all grow up. And so for me, a solution, as we're talking about all of this, when I see that happen, is to actually, whether I read about it or whether I'm seeing it, then I pull aside the person who was on the receiving end and say, I want you to know I saw that. I want you to know, don't second guess yourself. You did everything right. And how can I support you going forward? If we're at this conference, what can I do for you for the rest of this conference so you feel safe? So that's a solution that I like to implement. Is there anything that you ladies think, when you see this happening to other people, that you think is a good solution to implement as we're navigating the world together?
Well, the multiple ways to approach incidents, and it often depends on how well you know the person, because some people will appreciate you speaking up in the moment, so everyone learns. Sometimes you're better off talking to the person who say the interrupting thing, afterwards say, hey, I couldn't help noticing that you interrupted so-and-so while she was speaking, and she had a really good point that would have been interesting. And perhaps next time, if you have an idea and you're afraid that you will forget what it is, because I do that myself, maybe if you write it down quickly so that when it's your turn to speak, you still have the thought in your head. Because it was probably prompted by what she was saying, and you could have built on each other instead of cutting each other off.
When I've seen, there were two cases that came to mind at one conference. In one case, they saw a woman who seemed very clearly uncomfortable talking to a salesman who was reaching out the right hand to touch her forearm again, touch her upper arm, getting close. She was backing away. And I only vaguely knew who the woman was. And I walked up to her. I knew her name and her company. And I was like, hey, I've been looking to talk to you. Would you like to come over here and sit? Because I've been, I said, oh, I'm sorry, are you in the middle of something here? And she's like, no, I can talk to you now. I said, oh, if you're sure, let's go on over here. And I said, I actually don't really have anything to say, but I want to rescue you from that. She's like, thank you so much. I didn't know what to do. And there was another case on the second night. There was a woman who was the wife of a conference attendee, got incredibly drunk at an event, and it was a walk back to the hotel, and I saw she was clearly in distress, so being lady night, I went up and I had her take my arm and was leading her along, and she was muttering to herself the whole time, like, I've got to get back to my room or else he's going to hit me. I can't do this because you have to help me find my room. I'm like, well, what room number do you... And she's like, I don't remember, but if I don't get back there before he does, he's going to hit me. And I said, do you remember what floor it's on? She was so drunk, she was literally in another world. I mean, she had no idea. The key cards don't say the room number. She didn't have anything on her. I said, well, you know, to tell me your full name and let's go to the front desk and we'll find out. No, if he sees me with anyone, he'll just take it out on me more and more. And finally, at one point, I was walking her down the hall saying, it's okay, I'll say that I was talking to you and I distracted you and it was, you know, and everything. And she just took off and ran. And I couldn't catch up with her. And she was amazingly drunk, but could outrun me. And just, I was horrified. And the next day, I saw her at breakfast. And I said, hey, by the way, I found that website that you asked about last night. She kind of looked at me. And I had typed on my iPhone screen and held it out to her and said, this is my personal phone number. If you need help, please call me. I will listen and everything. And she just shook her head violently and sort of turned away and turned her back on me. So at that point I said, okay, I've done what I can. I didn't want to leave a physical note because someone might find it, but I was expecting her to like memorize it or type it down. But I felt bad, but there's nothing else I could do.
That's super smart. That's actually incredibly smart. Una, we teach that all the time when I work with survivors of abuse, and that's one way to get them information.
And I know we've said things that we as women can do, but one of the things that a lot of the time people don't do, and the women are equally to blame in this, is when we're bringing our kids up, we only teach the daughters about sexual abuse and safe tips and for how to be safe if they're out alone, and preferably not to be out alone. We don't think of teaching the boys that this is how women tend to get treated in society, and this is all the extra steps that your sister is going to have to take to be safe. And if you're out late at night and you see a woman on their own, cross the street so you're not behind her and not scaring her to death. Or you pay attention to these tips, and so if your spidey senses go off, you can go up to them and say, oh, hey, I'm so sorry I kept you waiting. I am really, really rude. Let's go get a booth. And then then say to the guy that's hassling them, I'm sorry, what were you doing with my imaginary wife, sister, girlfriend, whatever? And then afterwards, apologize to the woman for butting in and say, I'm totally backing off now. You don't have to talk to me or anything. I'm not going from one skeevy male to another. Because people could work as a pair and set that up.
Truth. I think what we're discussing. And one of the beautiful things is that be present and in the time that feels most safe, take action, because most people will say, I don't know what to do. Even if the time is not right now to take action, speaking up and being present in every moment in the most safe way, even to Una's example, if the woman shakes her head and runs away, she still has information. And maybe 2 weeks from now, she might remember that and remember the number and be able to want to seek help. But unless we start hearing people and really being present, I'm afraid at this moment in time of the way the earth is spinning and the heaviness of energy that can be felt, not paying attention to people is going to expand the loneliness and expand the sadness.
And men can stand up too. I intervened in an incident where a woman was being pressured, and one of my young male employees was with me, and he had been standing there shocked. He has a very good heart. He's a very, very good person, and I totally trust him around anyone. And he was like, I'm glad you did something, because I wasn't really sure what to do. And I said, why? You know what to do. So, yeah, but I'm just afraid to intervene because I'm afraid that I might end up triggering a reaction that I'm another man coming into the situation. And I said, if you act with honor, if you act with politeness, if you act with respect, most of the time you're going to get it right. Mm-hmm. You know, don't micromanage this or second guess yourself. Most of the time, if no one else is there, do the right thing and the truth will out. And he was like, well, I didn't know if I might be thought to be like in cahoots with the person, like you were saying, Fiona, or if I was going to be another. And I said, it doesn't work that way. It's not everyone's the enemy. All men are the enemy. It's this person is the enemy.
Yes, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
A frenemy?
Yes. Yes. And, I mean, you can even say, if you're waiting for someone, I can sit with you for 10 or 15 minutes, and I will stay on the opposite side of the table, but you'll at least have someone to act as a barrier, because some men will only respect having a male there because
exactly.
They think women can only be a man's property. They back off. If you even show them an engagement ring, it doesn't count because that male is not physically there, and as we now know with the same-sex marriage, that might not actually be a male, so that claim can't possibly be respected.
I knew a guy who said when he was in a situation where he wanted to intervene but was afraid, it sounds awful, but he pretended to be gay because then he wasn't seen as being like a sexual predator threat. So he said his brother was gay and, you know, lived in Miami and was, you know, very flamboyant. So he basically channeled his brother and walked up like, oh, who do your hair? Don't worry, I'll fix it for you. You know, come over here, girlfriend, you know, and everything. And got her out of the situation that way. And she was just like, okay, this doesn't sound threatening at all. And
it probably works both ways, because the guy that was the threat wouldn't see him as a threat to his territory, or his sexual possession territory, and impinging on his females.
Right.
And it worked for the woman to feel safe too, so it de-escalated.
If he protested, you'd turn and say, oh, I get your hair next, but her first, okay, her first.
I think the more we do that too, I believe the more we're creative in ways that we approach and how we act, then the more you pay attention to your gut. To your point, Una, somebody standing there thinking or saying, I feel like I should, but do I? The more you do it, the more you honor that feeling of I feel like I should, and then you actually take action on it. And I think that's the difference maker, is to take action in whatever creative way you can.
Creativity is key. You can walk up just like your law says, excuse me, I don't mean to interrupt the two of you in whatever you're doing, but I'm trying to find my way to this restaurant where I'm supposed to meet someone, and by golly, I'm just late and I can't, like, you know, show the guy the map of the hotel. Can you tell me where this restaurant is and make up some restaurant that's not on the map so we can't find it? And like, and then that gives the other person a chance to sort of slip away. Well, you know, I tried looking over there, but by gosh, it sure was cousin, as far as I could see, and I talked to this one fellow over there. Do you know him, the white-haired gent? You just keep talking and talking, and they're getting frustrated watching their prey escape. You could improv is key.
But if you're no good at improv, and you've been through situations like this and wished you could help, listen to things like this and jot down a few ideas, even ideas in your phone of, next time I'm in a situation like this, here are three things I could try. And for some of them, if you see a bad situation happening, like Caroline did earlier, at the time, for safety of both you and the person, maybe all you can do is watch and document, maybe even record it with your phone, but afterwards go across and say, I saw that happening, I'm willing to be a witness, and I videoed it with my phone, and you aren't alone. People saw that. And people that saw it actually cared rather than just being queasy and not watching.
I think that's a great idea, because the more you can find ideas and you hear somebody else talk about what worked, the more you can implement those ideas. I mean, I was at an airport and this man was, and I was watching it go down, and he would not leave this woman alone. And she kept telling him to back off, and she wouldn't. So finally, I went up and I stood between them. And I put my back to him and I said, oh my gosh, darling, you're beautiful. Thanks for waiting for me. And I turned around and I said, were you keeping my girl company? I said, she's fine now, right? Mm-hmm. And he turned around, right? It was, and she just looked at me and she goes, oh my gosh, thank you. You know, she just mouthed thank you to me. And, you know, we had a conversation because I stayed. I didn't want to leave until he left. And I said, oh, let's give him a few minutes. I said, we can move to another table and I can leave whatever you feel comfortable with. And she said, no, please stay here and just talk. So that's what we did. You know, we just stayed and talked. And we talked about the ways we're going to do all of that next time for any women we see.
Yeah. And guys have issues too. Mm-hmm. And they're often the hardest pressed to actually ask for support and advice, because our society says that they should be able to handle things themselves. So when we get back after the break, we'll talk about how silencing affects everyone.
I'd love that. So we are back. So let's talk about the ways that people are silenced, you know, in general, not just women, but men as well, and how that can negatively affect, you know, them personally, your interactions with them, and then also how people show up at work when that happens.
I do remember one time when I was talking during the break where I saw a male coworker berating another male coworker, a younger one, and the younger one was actually had tears running down his face, and I froze. I wasn't sure how to get in the middle of it, and it wasn't a matter of rank or anything. I actually started to get embarrassed and wonder, am I going to embarrass the younger one more by getting involved? And I got into an analysis paralysis, and I did the wrong thing. Even though I had all the privilege and power, I stayed out of it. And you don't always do the right thing. You know, I know I have been telling these stories that make it sound really blasé, like, oh, I'm always jumping in Superwoman. But no, I don't do the right thing all the time, but I try. And I think that's what's important. You're never going to do the right thing all the time, but you have to try some of the time, most of the time, better than doing nothing all of the time.
And instead of railing against yourself afterwards and saying, I'm useless, why didn't I do so-and-so? Take those why didn't I do so-and-so ideas and use them as plans, as seeds for next time. When we have a planned action, like when we're in a car sitting at the light, waiting for the light to go green, and as soon as it goes green, we're away. We've got a planned action, so it forms naturally, it leaps straight forwards, and there's nothing that gets in the way of it. If you've got a planned action because you've had thoughts last time of, why didn't I do so-and-so? Instead of always fighting last time's battle, set that in place as a planned action for next time, and then it will come naturally, and you won't be stuck there afterwards kicking yourself again.
Exactly, and I think these ideas that we're coming up with, you know, with being intentionally fearless, it is the choice in every everyday life, in big moments and small moments, to use that particular superpower you have, but also to develop those powers that fall naturally within what your zone of genius is and allow them to rise up when they're needed to. And for, you know, for me, and everybody has them differently, right? For me, I know that I do have the confidence to insert myself in situations, and I can play a role in whatever role that is. I've had the experience, much like what Una had with witnessing two men, and it was in a work environment, and you, what's going through my mind is, okay, I'm going to insert myself. Am I going to... the person who's doing the berating is going to be mad at me. The person who's receiving it could get a further, even more anger attitude from the person who's issuing this particular egregious moment. Or I could play the ditzy blonde and walk up and say, oh my gosh, it's so great to see you. If John's the one that, you know, in my situation where I needed to rescue, oh my gosh, I'm so excited to see you. You promised to help me on that project. You did so great on it last time. I really appreciate you. And then go, oh my goodness, did I just interrupt something? I'm so sorry. Did I just interrupt something? Okay, well, I'm just going to talk to John for just a minute because I just need a minute of his time. And then it stops that moment in action. It stops it. And I know that I'm capable. I know if I play that role, I've just done it to diffuse something where I didn't have to exactly put on my superhero cape, but I did kind of have to take it out of the closet and shake it off a little bit in order to enact a change.
And people might think, well, they're just going to yell at them later again, but it takes time to work up a good head of steam.
It does.
And afterwards, if they do get back, they'll say, I'd like you to think on what I was saying earlier and make sure you take that to heart, and the moment is over and it's gone.
Exactly. And you may have an opportunity, which the opportunity for me did present itself, that I could go to this person whom I'm calling John and say, you know, I just want you to know that what I witnessed was egregious. And if you need my assistance in documenting what I witnessed, I'm happy to do that for you. If you need to know that I value you as a team player, I do. Let me tell you all the ways you've helped me in my career. You can refuel that person in an authentic way with specifics to who they are in their mm-hmm. own superhero, in their own zone of genius, mm-hmm. so that if the person comes back again,
yes.
John is armed. John is armed with a cape. John is armed with remembering what his zone of genius is and could better look at the situation, advocate for himself, because someone has reminded him, this is what your cape looks like.
And sometimes you can phone anonymously to HR and say, I witnessed this. This is not the person complaining. This is not them reporting it. I saw this. This happened. This is not how our people should be treated. Whatever the reason, whether it's not even overt discrimination, just being treated badly and beyond the standards that are expected in the workplace for professionalism.
It has to be truly anonymous, though. As I found out, if you go to HR yourself, they will document it. Even if you say, I don't want to go on the record, but you will be on the record at that point. So just believe me, I know that.
I know of a case at a local workplace where a person's manager was yelling at them repeatedly and bad-mouthing them. And they stood for it for weeks, and then one day they yelled back at them, and they were fired for being rude and insubordinate. And security was called in case this person was violent. And I hadn't witnessed any of the cases myself, but I'd heard about many of them from other people. And I going to HR and saying, I've been told by multiple people that someone is behaving badly, is virtually impossible to do because it's just smoke and rumors. But trying to get... saying you'll hold someone's hand while they go and talk to HR in case they need the moral support, so someone doesn't get unfairly and unjustly tone policed into not having a job.
Exactly. Thank you so much for these ideas and these conversations, ladies. I appreciate your ability to be intentionally fearless with me every week. It's been a pleasure.
Well, we aren't always intentionally fearless, but it's something we strive for. I mean, it's you try to incorporate it in your life as best as you can and keep building on that message. So Thank you very much, Carolyn, for leading the discussion, and I thought it was really insightful, and I heard some great ideas from you and Fiona, and hopefully I had some ideas.